Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is BJ. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, BJ.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and to help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we're discussing step 12, part B. Please help me welcome our panel this evening. We have Emma and Randall. All right. Okay, and how it's going to work is I will read the first paragraph, which tonight starts on page 96. And then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. So step 12 is, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. If you'd like to follow along, the first reading is on page 96. Starting with suppose. Suppose now you are making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you're available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. And we're going to start with Emma.
Hello. Hello, everyone. My name's Emma. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Emma. It was on. You're live.
So my sobriety date is September 25th, 2011. I have a sponsor who knows that they are my sponsor. And they have a sponsor as well. And my home group is in Richmond. I live up there while I'm in school. I actually got sober here in AA. And I have the privilege of sponsoring other people today. And, you know, the 12th step, really, when I break it down, it's three parts. You know, it says, having had a spiritual awakening, we try to carry the message, and then practice these principles in all of our affairs. So the first part, having had a spiritual awakening, you know, just to give a little background to my and share my story, you know, for me, I was kind of just like a walking pressure cooker, like, my whole life. And people, you know, I felt abnormal, but everybody else was normal. And I just wanted to be normal. So I would do things and say things to get people to like me and feel, you know, good about myself. And, you know, that's why I drink. It made me feel good, and I drank for the effect produced by alcohol. I didn't drink because it tasted good or because I liked how it looked, you know, cocktails like a strawberry daiquiri. I drank because when I did, the result that I got was like, first of all, it was immediate, and all of that, I don't like myself in my own skin. I react emotionally, which means for me, if I'm angry, I react angrily. If I'm sad, I react sadly. And also, you know, that those discontented feelings, that nothing is ever enough for me. When I drank, all of those things just went away. It was like, poof. And that result, I chased that until I crossed over a line some point and I couldn't go back. There's no rewind button. That point that I crossed was that I had lost all control over the amount of liquor that I drank. So I would say, all right, I'm only going to have one. And then I would have like seven or eight. You know, and when I honestly wanted to, I couldn't quit entirely. I could, you know, get sober every day and say, all right, today I'm going to be sober. But I could never stay sober because I could never find that result, that effect that alcohol gave me with anything else. And I thought the only option I had was to kill myself. And I did. And I woke up in a hospital and I was like, you know, I felt like a cockroach. I was like on my back like this. And I was like, my spirit animal is a cockroach, I guess, because, you know, I just can't die, you know? And that's where that landed me. And I tried treatment and I tried rehab, still seeking that result, that effect. And nothing had enough power to, you know, keep me sober. And I came into the rooms, and nobody had to convince me to do anything. I came in, and I saw you guys. And when I was in treatment, you know, I met other people, and we would talk about, you know, our drinking stories and some of the things that we did or the way that we drank or some of the things that we thought. And I was like, wow, there's other people out there like me. Because I genuinely thought I was the only person who drank and felt and thought the things that I had, you know, so I started to identify with people in treatment. But the problem was, is we were all sitting in a circle and we look down at our feet and none of us have shoelaces and we're all locked in a room together, you know, and there was no common solution. There was no cement that binded us together. You know, we're all hanging on to trying to find the life raft. We're all drowning trying to find the life raft together. So I understood that common, you know, that peril, that suffering. But until I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, did I find that solution? Was I offered a solution? And so nobody had to convince me. I wanted to feel better. And, you know, someone stuck their hand out to me. They said, welcome. They said, you know, you no longer have to feel what you're feeling right now. And to be honest, I didn't know what they were talking about, but it sounded a lot better than going home and staring at the ceiling fan and praying, you know, for strength to kill myself or some sort of external, like, stimuli, like a truck or somebody to kill me, like a truck run over me, somebody to kill me, or me just fall over from a heart attack at 16. And that sounded a lot better than what I was doing at 90 Days Sober with nothing, absolutely nothing, showing up to the rooms of AA. And so they offered me their time and their experience. And they offered me a way out, which is the 12 steps. So, you know, the reason why I'm hitting on this, the spiritual experience, is because, you know, the book and the steps is to enable me to get a relationship with a higher power that will solve my problem. And my problem is that I have no willpower whatsoever to resist or leave a drink alone or whatever. You know, and I have these insane thoughts that drive me and convince me to pick up that drink as well. And I get that relationship with a higher power and things start changing in my life internally. I was a high school dropout. My mom was about to kick me out. I had no friends. And none of that really changed immediately. But internally, the desire to drink and also kill myself because of my alcoholism started to go away. And as I continued on, you know, as a result, I had that spiritual experience. And I've continued to have them, and that's how I've been able to stay sober for the past 5 years. And so it says here, suppose now you're making your second visit to a man. So before, in the previous pages, you know, it talks about, it gives clear-cut directions what to do when I find someone who is identifying as an alcoholic or is in a hospital for alcoholic treatment. You know, that's what the fellowship used to do before they had meetings, to seek out the newcomers, or drunks in this case. How I approach them. And the first visit is, you know, I share a little bit about my experience with them, try to get them comfortable with me, gain their confidence, really see if they're an alcoholic or not. Let them decide that. Say, all right, read this book. So second time, he has read this volume and says he is prepared to go through the 12 steps of the program of recovery. So now I'm carrying the message. I had the spiritual experience and I'm trying to carry the message. So I've had the experience myself, the experience working the 12 steps and having that spiritual awakening. So says you can give him practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision. So like I said, for me today, when I'm approached by somebody or I'm talking with someone in this context, I don't try to force myself upon people. You know, if you're willing, then I'm willing. You know, nobody could convince me to get sober by doing the steps. I wanted to because I met with people and I asked them for their help, and they gave me practical advice. Okay, what does practical advice mean? Well, for me, you know, I was an alcoholic and I was dying. I didn't want to live, and it was practical for me to work these steps because that was my only way to freedom. So for me, if you're an alcoholic, you identify as an alcoholic, we can talk about that. We're reading the book, you've read the book, I'm reading the book with you and explaining what an alcoholic is. The practical advice is like, okay, well, if you want to work the steps, then I can help you do that. So I don't have to force myself on anyone. And that's nice because, you know, I used to think that in order for me to stay sober, I had to, like, beat this, you know, and not beat this into other people, but, like, convince other people and be like, yeah, like, this worked for me, like, the spiritual enema. I had this spiritual enema, and I was like, I have to convince people, and I have to, like, get sponsees, and I have to. And I'm like, no, the only thing I have to do is share my what happened with me, give them practical advice if they want that. So everything else is not up to me. So yeah, thanks for letting me share. Sorry.
Thank you. Hi everybody, I'm Randall. I'm an alcoholic. Hey everybody. My sobriety date's March 3rd. Hold on, let me double check. March 3rd, 2015. I have a home group, West Ghent. We meet Wednesday nights, 8 o'clock, St. Andrews, just down the street. I have a service position at the district level. And I have a sponsor, too. Imagine that. He knows I'm alive. I also have had the opportunity and the blessing to be able to sponsor other men and work these steps with them. And Emma did a great job. I'll qualify too. I love to get wasted, and it worked for a long time for me. I mean, drinking, little tutors, you know, various powders. If you want to break needles out, I'm into that. So it doesn't matter. Let's get down. And that's just the type of guy I am. And I spent the last 3 years of my drinking convincing myself I wasn't one of you guys because I was a heroin addict. When I came around this time, I think that things that you guys have been telling me for years, because I was introduced to you guys in 2012, my dates in 15, the things that you guys said, like the first drink gets you drunk, didn't make sense to me for years. Those things started to make sense this time around. And all of a sudden, all those extracurricular activities that I was doing boiled down to one thing, the solution to which is in this book. And I stuck around long enough to understand that the drinks and the drugs and all that stuff wasn't the real problem. That stuff operates completely separate of me. You know, that stuff's out there. It's just when you put it in me, it has a strange effect. And it usually results in, like, handcuffs, hospitals, you guys' feelings getting hurt, me not liking myself too much and hating you. I didn't really realize till going through some of these steps that that a lot of that stuff, my feelings towards you guys and myself, existed that way for a long time before the drink showed up in my life. I like to get after it. If you're the type of person that, you know, drinks a couple, says you have a big day tomorrow and you have to leave the bar, I never want to see you again. Like, I don't want to hang out with you. Doesn't sound like fun. If we're at step 12, and just if you're new, there's 11 before that. They're numbered and it's suggested to do them in order. And Emma did a great job describing the process of, me convincing myself what an alcoholic looks like with some facts brought to me from a sponsor. Like, hey man, you've got an obsessive mind. You've got a body that has an allergic reaction to this stuff. Once you put it in, you're not going to be like that guy who yawns, stretches, and goes home and, like, continues his, like, productive life. You know, you're going to wake up 3 days later, three states away from where you started, saying, huh, that was fun. Where's the next one, you know? That's me. That's how my mind works. I made an inventory. First, let's go right here. And there it says, make a decision in that paragraph. And I'm convinced that that decision is making the decision to trust God. That first initial decision to say, I can't do this anymore. I can't live the way I'm living. There's got to be some other way. That's me making a decision. Right? Then I'm going to sit down with someone and tell my story. And that begins to look like, if I expand that out, maybe that's a fourth, fifth step type deal right there. If I'm working with a sponsor, that's telling my story to him, telling my story to me for the first time with an honest, you know, sort of lens. And then going through and rectifying those things in my past, and incorporating some things daily, which you guys taught me. So trusting God, making a decision, cleaning house, and now we're getting on with the business of helping other people, right? I'd like to approach this sort of like what you guys did for me when I came in here first, because that's my first experience with a 12-step. And then also how I've continued to mess that up with guys that I'm trying to help every day. You know, and the first time I sit down with guys, I usually tell them all I've got is my experience and my current misunderstanding of what is written in this book. And it seems to be good enough, you know, with the help of God, to work out sometimes. So here's how I don't follow the instructions in this paragraph ever. He has read this volume. I've never asked a guy to go and read 164 pages of this book prior to me meeting him a second time. Like, I'm a millennial. I'm apparently lazy as hell. So I'm not going to ask anybody else to read these 164 pages. I didn't do that. That's not my experience. You know, my sponsor sort of said, hey, why don't you meet me at my house? And I thought that was weird. Why am I going to go to some strange guy's house and sit down and who knows what we're going to do, burn some incense or, I don't know, man, do some meditation, I don't know. But I was beaten down. I like to tell this story. I was like 3 hours out of an adult diaper when I came in to see you guys. I literally got off a plane. I went and detoxed in Detroit, and they pumped me full of stuff, woke me up. I sat in a room for about 3 days in diapers because I couldn't control anything that was going on bodily with myself. And I got back on the plane, and I showed up at the little house right here on a Saturday night. And I knew what I had to do because I'd been around you guys. I'd been to probably 100 meetings before this, on and off, mostly off. I just raised my hand and asked for help. I need guys' numbers. I knew that's what I had to do. I knew that was the first step to doing this. For some reason, that stuck with me. I called a guy the next day, and the rest you'll probably hear some about as we go through this. I've never asked a guy to read this whole volume because I know how badly I would misinterpret most of the information in here myself, and that scares me. But you know, sort of a questionnaire is involved. You know, are you willing to sort of do what I do to do this, to have this experience? And if the answer is yes, let's go ahead and do it. I love giving practical advice. I love giving advice I don't take myself to other people. That's one of my go-tos. Just like we were talking before the meeting, and I always get worked up before I come and sit in front of you guys because I know what I do when I'm sitting out there. And it's not pretty in my head. We'll just leave it there. You know, it's just my experience. I don't have anything to hide from you guys. Why is there a reason to be nervous? I'm with my people. Let them know you're available if you wish to make that decision. I'm here. I'm going to match your willingness. That was a phrase that was given to me by my sponsor. He's like, man, I'm just going to match your willingness. If you call me, you know, every week and want to read, we're reading every week. We'll find a time to make that happen. And that's something else that didn't make sense to me either. Then we started going through the beginning of the book, learning words like altruism. You know, like, I don't know what that means, man. Is that like take money, because that's what I'm about. Like, let's go get what Randall needs, you know? And I started learning words like that through going through this book with a sponsor. Things started to really make sense to me after just a few months, you know? And it was crazy. Let's see. Do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult with someone else. I have trouble with this because I'm the best sponsor in AA, at least this side of the Mississippi. Like, you know, at least that. Yeah, I've gotten better at this just through getting dissed repeatedly by people. Like, nah, I'm good, man. I don't need that stuff that you're doing. Just don't need it. You know, or hey, I got an old lady now. I don't need to talk to you anymore. Or hey, man, I'm making that paper now. You can back up. I got it figured out. You know, and who am I to be mad at somebody like that? Because all three of those things are things that I've told some guy in the past, like, you can buzz off, dude. Like, I don't need you. And you're like, quasi-Christian, weird, religious thing that you're doing in AA with that self-help nonsense for weak people who believe in God. Don't need it. Have no use for that. I'm making money, and I've got what I need romantically, so why would I need 12 steps? That sounds like a two-step program. One, two, boom. You know? Whenever I'm getting worked up about somebody who prefers to consult with someone else, I sort of have to look at that, look at myself again and just see the various states that I've been in leading up to this point and places I'll probably go again, you know, in the future with varying degrees of success and failure, mostly failure. It's tough when someone doesn't want your help and you know they need it. It's tough for me to let go of that. But I had to do things like unfollow past sponsees on Facebook who are drinking. Like, I just got to take that out of my life, because otherwise I'll go call that guy like every day and be like, what are you doing? I'm still here. What are you doing? I'm still here. And I don't think that's my path. You know, I think that God's going to lead that guy in the direction that he's supposed to go, and me, and if our paths intersect, then we'll get a chance to do this stuff again. Thanks.
Thank you. Second reading is on page 98. It is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service claim, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming that he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. Emma.
So, for me, when I first got sober, I had this idea that I needed to get the trust of my family back, and I needed to do all these things in order to be presentable and sort of like get my life together before actually doing anything else, taking any advice that I had been given. I had gone to treatment before I came to AA, and you know, that's what I was thinking the whole 9 months when I was there. And then the last like 2 or 3 weeks, you know, I was walking through the hallway of one of the wood shop places where I was at, because they made us like get all these hobbies. And you know, I was like, started huffing the wood stain in the back. I get on a plane and I'm like shaking like an ASPCA dog, and I'm like sitting in first class, and the flight attendant is like, are you okay? And you know, again, I had been brought to that same place, that hopelessness. And then when I come here, you know, I think that I need to get back in school. I need to do all these things before, you know, I want to do the 12 steps. I knew I needed to. But again, it says on page 59, there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. And I had to see the need for God's power in my life. And when I had that realization, all of this stuff went away. So burning the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. You know, how do I do that? For me, I just explain to people what happened to me. And sometimes that's enough. And sometimes, you know, they have to go and see what it's like for themselves. I can't save everybody. If they're fully convinced that this is, you know, the case, that they have to get their wife back or, you know, get a job, there's nothing I can do besides try to, you know, show them what happened to me and, or not show them, explain to them what happened to me. And, you know, it's pretty simple. It's easier to just say, trust the process. And all of those things that I'm trying to get, or the people I'm helping that are trying to get, you know, it's promised to me in here that I will get these things if I work the steps. So for me, that was like motivation in a way, you know. I was like, it says, like, you know, I will be free of economic insecurity, or economic insecurity will leave me. And that's been true. So kind of putting that back and using this book as a tool as well, I guess, to burn into the consciousness of these people, or this person that's coming to me with this, is a bit easier. So yeah, that's all I really have for this. My experience, like I shared, I cannot put anything above my sobriety. I can't put conditions on my sobriety today, because I made a deal in the third step where I said, God, I offer myself to thee. It wasn't the other way around. I didn't say, God, I will offer myself to thee as long as you give me this or get me that. So I say that prayer every day, and I try to pause and remember that, what that means for me. I need relief, and I make this exchange with God, like, all right, I'm giving up my will and my life for you in order to get that relief that I need, that ease and comfort. So I really like the last paragraph where it says, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. I mean, this is like the ABCs of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, no human power can relieve me. And I tried that, so maybe people need to try that for themselves. I guess it just depends on the person, how teachable they are. So, yeah, thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. There's very few one-word sentences in the book. There's one of them in this paragraph. And it comes right after the He clamors for this or that, claiming that he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Period. That's it. If I'm walking around you guys like I came in here a few years ago, saying if I just get this job, if I just get this car, if I just get this person in my life, if I just keep manipulating people enough to get what I want, you know, then life is going to be perfect. He's telling me that I got a different word for nonsense that I usually use. Nonsense. Nonsense. And I've taken hard knocks myself, you know, and come to the realization that the only thing that works for a guy like me is taking these 12 steps. Number three, which Emma pointed out, is saying, God, you got me. And everything that comes along with me. So, that's what I found has worked. So that's what the guys that I work with have to listen to when I'm sharing my experience around step three. I mean, I've tried everything, and this goes back to sort of qualifying for this seat. I tried hypnotherapy, which I still have the lifetime guarantee in my safe. I'm thinking about taking it back up for some other things I got going on. But that didn't really work out too well when you're drunk and high, sitting on the couch trying to envision a ball of white light coming down over your head. I'm like, I see that with my eyes open. I don't have to close my eyes. I am effed up, dude. Like, you know? So hypnotherapy's out. I tried the psychiatrist. I went to a psychiatrist when I first came around this time. And about a month and a half in, you know, she's a social worker for drug and alcohol related issues. She said, stop paying me. You do not need to be here. You're not insane, except as regards to what you're talking about here. And she ended up photocopying like some things out of my book. Like, oh, that makes sense. I can use that in my IOP. Stop coming back here. I don't want your money. If anybody else has a psychiatrist has ever said that to him, let me know. I think I might be the only one. But it was crazy to have somebody say, stop coming to see me. You don't need that. I tried that. That didn't even work for me either. I tried to bench press my way to recovery. I think I got close. I did it with steroids and without steroids, and I was sober as hell with the steroids, let me tell you. And if you had anything to say about that, let's take it outside.
Yeah.
That was a bad few months for me after those wore off. I was really sad, let me tell you. You didn't want to come and see me on the couch, man. I was like a puddle of mud, just, man, bad. These are the things I do to try to not be me. You know, that's what it comes down to. I really don't like who I am. And these are the hard knocks. I'm just trying to get across some of the things that it took for me, you know. And while it's not dependence on people, it's still dependence on things. Because I didn't understand really why I felt that way. And it took this process to sort of parse that out. And I got a better understanding of that today. I've got a clear understanding that dependence on God is the only way that I get to enjoy a reasonably happy life today. Burn the idea. I love that too. Bill gets kind of aggressive with language a few points in the book, you know. Usually it's flowery and soft and stuff like that. Burn the idea. That's my job here if I'm working with somebody else. Your wife leaving you doesn't matter right now. You know, your boss firing you yesterday doesn't matter right now. The 15 credit collectors calling you every single day, mailing you stuff all the time, it doesn't matter right now. When I'm like 6 days sober, I will fight you if you tell me that. You know, but it takes a little bit of a leap of faith, right? And everybody sitting here who's been through these steps can has some sort of experience like this, where all of that stuff eventually got set aside for what really, really mattered. And that's how can I channel this power that you guys are talking about? My sponsor sort of describes it as putting AA in the center of my life, not worrying about the spokes. If it's a wheel, let's make AA the hub and see if the tire doesn't stay balanced. You know, see if the wheel doesn't just keep rolling right. You know, because today I can go into work and just be the greatest worker ever, and everybody's begging me to take time off after a day or two. Like, please leave the office. You don't have to solve the world's problems right now, Randall. You know, it's black or white with me. In my mind, just is a constant snowball effect. It's going downhill quick. And so I'll shut up about this because, and I just want to mention this. I think I talked about all this on the first reading, and then we got to this reading. I'm like, the book always says it better than I do. It just sums it up in about 12, 15 seconds, what it took me 12 minutes to talk about. But yeah, here it is, trusting God and clean house. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you. Next reading is on page 98. Now the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he is lucky enough to have a home. Though his family be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault-finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can then be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness.
So you are saying that I don't have to, or that I have to do this stuff like after I go home from the meeting, and like can't like yell at my mom and ask her like where my dinner is, and you know, when is she going to pick me up, buy me cigarettes? Because I'm sober, you know? And she should be grateful. My family, you know, put up with a lot of me. Or put up with me a lot from me. And when I got sober in the beginning, you know, I had the same attitude. Because I wasn't doing anything, and I was just in this IOP for a while before I made it to AA. And I was on the brink of not having a home. So I was in a group home, and I was going to be, you know, signed off to the government to be a ward of the state, and my mom had the paperwork on the table. And we'd kind of like look at each other every day, like every night. I'd be like, love you. Kind of just like look down at it and look at her. So, you know, this is when I get to be practicing these principles in all of my affairs. You know, what are the principles for me? You know, the God of my understanding, these spiritual principles. I was selfish, I was dishonest, I was, you know, resentful and afraid. And I acted like that. I act based off of my feelings. And when I start working this program and I start getting a relationship going with God, you know, my conception was that my higher power was loving, patient, tolerant, and kind. So, you know, I had to start acting that way. And I had to do it more than just in a meeting of AA. And it has been a journey. You know, my family isn't perfect, and, you know, people at my work aren't perfect. The things that I do, the people that I come in contact with today outside of AA, they're not spiritual. It's kind of easier to deal with alcoholics because you can just, A, either call them out on their BS, or B, just not even talk to them at all. But I have to avoid, you know, pointing my fingers at people. Today, I try to recognize other people as myself. And I got to that point because, or how I got to that point was, after I work the steps and, you know, I look at my resentments, and for my mom, for example, she was like one of the biggest resentments I had. And the way that it was explained to me is like, you know, somebody who's like sick, like in a hospital bed, and is like, say, has a stomach flu or something, you know, you're not going to walk up to them and be like, what's wrong with you? Like, stop doing this, you know, or like yelling at a baby for crying, like something that they can't help. Like, I'm going to walk up to, you know, the baby or this sick person and be like, what is it that you need? How can I help you? You know, and be loving and kind. And once I start developing that kind of attitude and I persist for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. I was an unlovable person. My mom was hard to love. But as I have continued on this path, you know, she has acknowledged that there has been a change. And she has come to me about things that she's done, you know, without me pointing them out to her. And we've been able to talk about that. It's been better than, you know, family therapy. I literally would go there drunk because I hated it so much, you know. It's just like, all right, what does your mom say that makes you upset? Or like, what, you know, and it's just like back and forth, and I'm like, it's not helpful at all. So I'm not perfect at this, but the bottom line is that I'm not above other people in AA or in the world whatsoever, or wherever, I mean, and I'm not below them. I just have to look at people as myself, as sick, and it's a lot easier for me to get out of my ivory tower, and get off of that spiritual hilltop when I'm thinking on that, having that sort of attitude. And I don't have to, like, force, like, love you, like, kind of thing anymore, you know? It just comes out. And I show people that I care about them today. I don't have to convince them. It says here, you know, it's talking about that. So, yeah, thankfully I've been, you know, and I don't have to go through this alone. That's another thing. People in AA, especially my sponsor, has shown me how to treat people. I didn't just have this, like, rebirth, like, spiritual rebirth, and, you know, was like Siddhartha Gautama, like, walking, like, I know, you know, on this spiritual path of liberation, whatever. People have shown me, and I continue to ask people, like, I'm dealing with this person, and I can't, you know, I don't know what to do. I'm dealing with that right now. How do I be kind? How do I be loving? You know, and of course I'm praying about it, but I'm asking people. because it's not it's not their inventory, it's mine. And it's my sobriety, and what's contingent upon that is the maintenance of the spiritual condition. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. My sponsor likes to point out that strained relations is the best that my home life can possibly look. Out of those three things, they're assuming the strained relations. Yeah. making amends to your family for a lifetime of hurt sucks. It really does. But those were some of the most beautiful demonstrations, spiritual demonstrations, that ever of my life. I went to my sister and said, you know, the standard language like it is in the book. And she says, and I said, what can I do to start being a brother? And she said, well, can you show me how to manipulate people? Ooh. She said, you're like the best at that. I was like, trying to live a little differently today. But those are things proven out over years and years and years. That's how I act. Right. So now I'm on a different basis here, right? Putting these principles into action that I've just learned from you guys. My sponsor had to show me what that looked like as well, and explain to me what that looked like in his life. It's a lot to take in at first. I think I'm getting a little bit better at it today. I like to read this paragraph selectively as well. You know, though my family may be at fault, I'll stop right there. That's a good sentence. little by little, the family may see their own defects. Check. I like the way that sounds. Actually, that sort of happened a little bit in my life, especially when the amends happened. You know, I got language from my mother like, I wasn't always there for you. You know, and it's like, I wanted to hear stuff like that going in. Like, I deserve that. But when she comes clean with something like that, I cannot help but be eye to eye with her, instead of looking down on her from some level. You know, it's amazing what this process does to level me up. Helpfulness and friendliness ends that paragraph. Thanks.
Thank you, guys. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for tonight, so I'm going to close by reading the next two paragraphs. Page 100, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. Assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go into their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice cap, and even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything.
Damn Eskimo.
Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem. All right. And if you guys could help me thank our wonderful panel. We will now pass the seventh tradition basket. Wow. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. At this time, are there any AA-related announcements? Ashton.
My name is Ashton. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
The Virginia Bid for Certified is having a New Year's Anonymity Ball in Hampton at the St. Mark's Grand Methodist Church. There's a potluck dinner from 7. Then from 8 to 9, there's a panel on the 12th tradition. Then at 9:15, there's a sobriety countdown. And from 10 to 1, there's a dance slash lip sync battle. So if you're interested, see me after. Also, if you don't want to do that for New Year's, I'm going to be going to Boston for the New England conference the end of the day. So if you want to go to Boston, get the car, get some hotel room, it'll be weird. Just chip in.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, I have an announcement. This home group, Simple Actions, is having supper and a speaker the 26th, which is the day after Christmas. So if you're coming out of your skin, it's a good opportunity to get out and be around your people. 6 p.m. potluck, bring some leftovers or a dish if you wish. 7 p.m., Al Jay from Buckingham, Virginia, is going to be speaking, and that's Monday the 26th. No other announcements? Okie dokie. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Would home group members please raise your hands?
Strong.
Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Nobody? Okie dokie.
Professionals.
All right, we have literature table over here. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you're interested in purchasing anything. If you can fold it, it is free. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor please raise your hand? If you have questions or like additional information about sponsorship in AA, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please come up and talk to me and ask me any questions. Reminders. Actually, this one's going to be a little different tonight. You guys might have noticed when you were coming in that the church is pretty busy. There are a couple events going on. So just for tonight, we're going to ask you guys to be really conscientious. And if you want to smoke, do it next to your car and try to keep your socializing to this room or Plaza del Sol after the meeting since we're a little busy. And in closing, can we thank Randall and Emma? Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on step 12 at the meeting after the meeting, which, like I said, will be at Plaza del Sol. It's on Colonial and 22nd. It's a Mexican restaurant. We'd love to have you join. And can I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
Not everybody.
Hey, Bobby.
Thank you.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right and the great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand him. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
And for all those who would like to join, help me close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Stay.